Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember, to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. If you want to join in, if you're listening online and you'd like to join in live on the call, the number to dial 347-884-8327. Once you're on the call, just press 1. Lisa will get to your questions, and then you'll get to me. And it happens every week, but I'm going to say it every week. Right at the end of the show, in the last 15 minutes, we get a whole bunch of questions, and then I can't get to everybody, and I leave everybody hanging. In the first 45 minutes, don't have a lot of questions, and I either take a lot of time with one question or I move on to some other stuff that I've got, which is fine. But if you want to get a question in, get it in early. I hate when we have to end the show and leave people holding. But if you get in early, we'll get to all the calls. If you wait till the last half hour, it starts to get crowded. So if you're going to have a question, press 1 on your phone. Lisa will get to you. Again, if you're listening online and you want to jump in on the call, you can listen right on your phone. And that way, if you do have a question, a comment, a topic, you can join us. That number is 347-884-8327. I'm going to start off tonight with the rates and the indexes and what's going on. The market demand index, just to give you a refresher, if you've heard me talk about this, two different sources that I get my numbers from, the two largest load board systems in the country, Internet Truck Stop and TransCore. The ES Internet Truck Stop Market Demand Index is a number that compares the available loads against the available trucks and puts an index to it, so that we can see going on week to week. It's an easy number to compare. The higher the number, the better it is for us. Anything above 7 or so means that the negotiation power is on the side of the carrier and the owner-operator. And to give you a history, if we go back to June, July of 2009, roughly a year ago, we were down in the 2s. With this index, and we stayed there till mid-January of this year. We started climbing up from the bottom. We were in the 2s, 3s, 4s all year long. Started to climb up out of the bottom by March. We hit that 7 number, kept right on climbing. Literally every week the index was up all the way to the end of May, where we kind of peaked at 12.9. Now, since then, I think I can officially say that the index is on a roller coaster, where for the last 2 years, it's been really kind of one direction with real small moves, either down, which it did for a long time, kind of bouncing along the bottom, which it did for a real long time, which is real small moves each week, all the way up. But now we're doing the roller coaster thing, really up and really down. This week we're down a little bit, But 2 weeks ago, we were way up. The week before that, we were way down. Now we're at 10.94 is where the index is. Still very strong for the carriers and owner-operators, but it is down off of its highs somewhat. Rates, I'll give you the rates from Internet Truck Stop. The average equipment rate was down 1% last week to $1.98. Flatbed rates were flat at $1.80. Reefer rates down 4% to $2.06. They had been $2.13 the week before. Specialized rates were the same at $2.31. Van rates were up 1% to $1.78. They had been $1.76 the week before. On the TransCore 360 boards, let's see what's going on over there. These two follow each other pretty close. If we look at the TransCore Freight Index on the spot market, comparing June 20th through the 26th with June 13th through the 19th, the index is down about just a little under 3%. If we compare May of 20 with May of 2009, the index is up 191%. So even though we're down, really strong numbers. Let's go through some rates from TransCore. May of 2010, those are the most current numbers we've got. Contract rates for vans at $1.40. The spot market rate for van at $1.24. Remember, contract is exactly what it says. Freight that's actually under contract. We know ahead of time who's moving it. Spot market is the stuff that gets moved as we go from the load boards. Now, those rates are without the fuel surcharge. Fuel surcharge for May for vans, 33 cents. So we'd be at $1.73 or so van rates for May of 2010. Compared to April of 2010, we're up about 4% on the spot market van rate and up just under 1% on the contract van rate. If we compare that to last year, spot market rates are up 10%. From May of last year, those are the van rates. Van load to truck ratio. Now, this tells us exactly on how many are available for every that's posted. Right now, for every truck posted, there are 3.38 loads. That's dry van. Last year, this time, there was 0.91. That's why it was so tough last year. If you had a van, there wasn't even a load for every truck. That makes it pretty tough. So 3.38, down a little bit, but still a very good number if you're looking at spot market freight. Reefer rates, actually pretty strong. Reefer rates are at contract rates for May, $1.50. Spot market rates $1.47, and to find the fuel surcharge, 35 cents, so roughly $1.85 or so on the reefer rates. Compared to last year, you know, not a real big change in reefer rates, only up about 4% on the spot market from last year. Reefer load to truck ratios. Right now, very, very strong at 8.2. Actually up a little bit this week, about a half a percent. For every reefer that's running around on the load boards, there are 8 loads available. So we should continue to see rates go up. Now, that load-to-truck ratio is up 312% over last year. It was 1.84 at this time last year. Flatbed rates, at $1.64 contract rate for May, $1.58 spot market rate, fuel surcharge 40 cents, so we're right at about $2 a mile for flatbed rates. Contract and spot market, both right there around $2 a mile. That is up about 8% over last year. And the flatbed load-to-truck ratio, still kind of crazy. Now, this peaked earlier this year. This peaked in April at almost 40 to 1. And we're still very strong at 24 to 1. For every truck, every flatbed on the load boards right now, there are 24 loads available. That's why we're seeing such strong rates on the flatbed side. If you want to jump in and comment about the rates, maybe give me an idea of what you're seeing out in the real world, certainly welcome to do that. To join us, dial 347-884-8327. We've got some questions, and I'm going to get to those in just a minute. I do want to remind you that tonight's podcast is sponsored by True Balance Wheel Centering Products.
Do you have your regular tire wear and vibration? Need to get more miles out of your tires and your fuel tank? You need True Balance Wheel Centering Products. These patented products center the wheels back to the wheel stud. The result is increased tire life, increased fuel mileage, and the smoothest ride possible, period. Go to the website, www.trutru-bal.com, and see what True Balance has done for other drivers just like you. If you drive a truck, True Balance is a must. Call us today at 866-686-9285 and get your center on.
All right, and we were going to have Angela Lang on from True Balance tonight, but we had to reschedule that. We really haven't talked about the True Balance product a lot, but we will get them on and do that. If you have any questions about what True Balance is, how it works, what it does, you can certainly ask me. I'll help you out with that. Just to, if you're listening and you're wondering if it's anything like Centromatics or Balance Masters, I'll tell you it's not. And I wish I could convince them to change their name, because they're not really a balancing product. They're a centering product. I wish they would change their name to True Center. They center the wheel and the brake assembly. They don't balance it. But they won't listen to me and change their name, so I'll keep trying. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's start off tonight in... where are we going? We're going to start off in Alabama. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Wanted to give you a little update. Last time I talked to you, I was telling you that I was getting about 8.33 with my C15 and my 387P. And a few weeks ago, I guess it's going on week four, I had dropped the converter and put on two Pittsburgh Power flow throughs.
Right, I remember.
As well as air tabs on the truck and trailer. And to my chagrin, I actually lost some mileage.
Yes, have we figured out the conundrum?
No, I've the first 2 weeks I lost about 0.6 miles to the gallon. But I noticed that I needed to retrain my foot because of the boost response was considerably different.
Okay.
I've got it to about stable. I'm about 8.3. So I'm at the break even. Now, the performance side, there's a noticeable difference. I really do run the low side pretty heavy. And I noticed that actually the boost hangs up a little bit higher than it has, especially when I drop it, when I'm running, pulling at 1,000. But one of the things I learned when I dropped my kettle converter I know I recognize that, and I took the stacks down, that the stacks on my 387 were flow through. Flow through. And I guess the other performance thing I noticed on my on the mufflers from Pittsburgh Power, when I had inquired about them, you know, the difference, because I really did not want to go to something louder. They basically talked about 20%. But by my figurings, it's about 80% louder.
Is it really?
Yeah, and you know what? If you look at the muffler, it's very easy to see. Because it's all, you know, the way it's created, it's got little cups that are sticking out up through the pipe. And if you look at it, you know, go ahead.
Did you get the new style? Did Pete tell you whether or not you did get the new style?
Yeah.
I have not tried that one yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you look at it, it catches about, and I don't know, but just eyeing it, I would say it catches about 20% of the exhaust.
Okay.
So when you flip on the Jakes, you know, now you're one of those guys where the cities are looking for you. Where from before I could run the Jakes and you could hardly hear them.
Right, right. Yeah, I have not tried that new style. In fact, the first time I saw it was at Louisville this year. Pete had one there. And he did say it's louder than their other muffler. And the muffler that I've used from them is a little louder than stock, but not much. On the Coronado, you really couldn't tell with the exhaust back behind the sleeper. You couldn't hear the difference at all. But Pete said, and he kind of said, this one's a little louder, but he didn't really tell me what a little meant. Maybe it's more than a little louder.
Well, what I noticed it on is when you release the Jakes, is considerably louder. From my side, it's a little bit louder on the cab side. It's not a real much difference. You can hear it also when you idle, sitting still,
okay,
as you've been here before. But, you know, I guess I'm, you know, I haven't done much to adjust my fuel performance except my driving habits. I'm really quite, you know, I basically drive 56. I load myself light consistently. And with this change, you know, this conversion, now, overall with the tabs, the filter, I basically replaced all my exhaust line except my chrome elbows I didn't replace. You know, I've got about $1,200 with the tabs, maybe a little bit more, maybe $1,350, because I had to configure some brackets for my where I dropped the converter at. Invested in it. And so from my side, I'm looking at it, you know, I don't really have regret, but I'm disappointed that I didn't do a little more, and I don't know how I would have done it, would have did a little more research to find out actually what benefits I would have received. Now,
sometimes you can't. I mean,
yeah, I understand.
You know, the fuel mileage game, there are times when I could almost guarantee somebody that if we do this, we'll get X improvement. One of the things we're finding now, though, you're way up at the top of the scale we're even working with. I mean, that we have so few trucks that are getting above 8 that we don't really have a lot of research on what does what. I mean, we're getting more and more of it, because we're getting more trucks that are up there, but it's fairly recent. So there isn't even any place you could go to get the research. I mean, TMC does a ton of testing, but almost every time I look at their test, they're starting with trucks that are in the mid-5s to 6s.
Right.
You know, and some of the other manufacturers have done some testing, but again, almost everybody tests on fleet type trucks that are in that 5.5 to 6.5 mile per gallon range, and it's certainly easier to make improvements there. One of the things I was hearing as I'm listening to your operation and how you drive and things like that, we're already at high fuel mileage. Air tabs might give us some stability, but at you know 56 miles an hour, there may not be enough there to get any real fuel mileage increase.
Right.
And on performance-related stuff, I have a feeling most of the performance-related stuff, you may feel it, but I don't know that you're going to see the difference. It's kind of like I have to be careful with my trucks, what I do as far as performance, because I don't put the engine under much of a load anyway.
Right.
So, you know, I'm really tempted to test a Pittsburgh power box on one of my trucks, but I have a feeling that I may not get nearly the benefit some people see. I mean, I'm going to see the benefit because we'll kind of wipe out all the nasty EPA settings in the ECM, but I'm never going to use any of that increased horsepower.
Right.
So I don't think I'm going to see the benefits. The one thing, you know, as we got towards the top of the scale, engine-wise, that I'm a little more optimistic about, but it's still pretty new, is the Evans coolant, because I think the higher temperature helps an engine even that isn't under a load.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I had questions last week on that, and I forgot for tonight. I'm really looking at Evans. Now, you know, the drop, just the fluid alone, it's going to basically be about $400. You need a couple hours to flush the old system, labor, a couple hours to put new thermostats in. So I really wanted to know what kind of money you, and I might have missed the show or whatever, if you spoke about how much the actual cost was to convert a truck from regular coolant to Evans.
Actually, one of the things we're doing here at Truck City Service while we're here is we're standardizing all the prices on this stuff. Because one of the challenges that's always been, all right, a guy says, well, you know, I bought the OPS, carrying it around in my truck because nobody really knows how to install it, and they just tell me whatever it takes them in time, that's what they're going to charge me for.
Right.
Well, we're going to standardize all that stuff. So we already have on the Evans a conversion for any up to 14 gallons, which I'm most probably going to do the conversion and give you 2 to 4 gallons to carry with you, is $12.50 total. That's thermostats, resistor pack, coolant, labor, everything out the door.
Now, would this affect a warranty if somebody had warranty? I don't have warranty on my engine, but, you know, somebody had a rebuild done, or he has a newer engine where there's factory warranty on it. How are they going to look at the conversion?
If we only put in the coolant, there would be no warranty effects whatsoever. The coolant's actually a better product than what they require.
Right.
If we start bumping up thermostats and putting resistor packs on, we could have some warranty issues, and we tell everybody that right up front. If you've got a warranty and you're concerned about it, we wouldn't do the full conversion, or, you know, you should know that if you think you're going in for some sort of warranty work, you might have to take the thermostats out and the resistor pack off. If you've got a warranty, it's something you need to be aware of and think about.
Now, what's a resistor pack?
Basically, what we're doing, I'll just give you an example on the Detroits. The Detroit typically runs about 185 thermostat. Fans come on in that 205, 210 range.
Right.
What we're doing is running the thermostats up to 215, and then the resistor pack really is fooling the temperature sensor so that the fan doesn't come on till 230.
I see.
Rather than try to go in and reprogram the ECM to raise the fan on to 230, which is much more expensive, we can just put a resistor pack in. It doesn't take nearly as long or cost as much, and it does the same thing.
Now, one of the points, you know, you've made that, you know, I'm validating is, you know, when you get up to the higher side of the fuel mileage end, it really is tricky on what you can do to actually better yourself when you're not starting from the ground and working your way up.
Right.
And I was amazed. You know, I dropped that converter off, and I got a 10-year-old boy. He was pretty curious, so he took a claw hammer to it and started breaking it apart to look inside. It's really quite interesting how restrictive that catalytic converter was, and you can really tell on the response pedal. But what's also surprising to me, with that converter on there, how it still had consistent mileage. So
yeah, you know, and you mentioned had, you know, maybe you could have done more research, but I have done the research, and let me tell you what we would have. If we look at purely research, Pete tells me that your setup, the way it was, can be as much as 30 to 40 inches of restriction. That's with that catalytic converter, that setup, there's a lot of restriction. With the right exhaust system, they've taken that all the way down into the teens. So we know what the restriction roughly was before. We know what we can get it down to after. And I don't know, did they happen to measure your truck or not?
No, I mean, I did the conversion myself.
Oh, okay. Well, we're doing some actual testing on different trucks when they come in stock. They're doing the flow test on them, then we're converting and testing. And we see that come down from the 30s, almost all the way up to 40 sometimes, down into the teens. That's a big change. Now, we can go to TMC's restriction testing, and they'll tell us that if we can reduce that much back pressure, we should see, based on those numbers, 2 to 3% fuel mileage increase. And that's not my number. That's a combination of Pittsburgh Power telling us what the restriction was, what it is now, and TMC saying, based on our testing, if you can reduce exhaust restriction by X, we should see X in fuel mileage increase. But doesn't seem to always work out in the real world.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know how that breaks down. From the seat side, you can tell the difference, obviously, in the response of the pedal. But I'm not after response.
I'm
about response isn't important to me, and I think that's where the weight of this thing is coming in at. I'm not after response. The 2 weeks it took me to retrain my foot was, I have to exercise that accelerator even less now, and I think that's why I lost the first couple of weeks. This is because I was exercising the accelerator the same way as before, but I didn't have the back pressure, and the boost was going up way quicker than I wanted it to.
Yeah,
I've got a couple of rule breakers. You know, I run 24 lows. I run 18. On my shifting, I shift 14 of my 18 gears every time I start and stop.
Right.
But I'm very aggressive.
The feedback certainly helps. You know, probably not yet we get the absolute expected results or something close to it. And what I'm finding in the real world is once we get past 7, all the research we can look at and all the increases we're supposed to be getting really start to get cut in half. I think I've figured out, I'm looking more and more at some of the numbers in fuel gauges all the time. You know, if you take a truck, and let's say we started a truck that gets 6 miles to the gallon and nothing's been done to it, and drivetrain really, and we start looking at the 27 things I've identified to increase fuel mileage with 11 miles to the gallon.
Yeah.
But that never happens. One of the things I found that will get us closer, though, is if we take the original fuel mileage, the way the truck was before it was modified, and we keep going back to work off that as our percentage, we actually do get a little closer. Because what happens is when I go from 6 to 7, now my percentage means my increases should get bigger, not smaller. And that never made sense to me because the opposite always happens in the real world. You know, 10% of 6 is 0.6. 10% of 7, now I've increased my fuel mileage
by
a full mile per gallon. Now if something is supposed to give me 10%, it's actually supposed to add 7/10 now.
Right.
Yeah, but it doesn't work that way. If we go back to the original, that tends to work a little bit. But keep me informed on what's going on. You know, we might have something else here. Maybe long term this might work itself out. I don't know. Keep me informed. Let me know.
Well, there's one other thought I want to present on this quickly. And that is, and again, I don't know the numbers, but it appears that go down speed, the speed at which you're moving up to get to your speed, the way you operate the accelerator, these are the most important and gains, both that bring stable gains, because I can't really go any slower. And yet I have a couple of rule breakers that actually work against me, you know, bigger rubber and so forth and so on.
Right.
But yet we're maintaining higher numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, every truck's going to be a little bit different. You're obviously doing a lot of things right to get that kind of a fuel mileage, even though you've got some things working against you. You don't have an engine that's known for fuel mileage to begin with. You're doing some other things, but you certainly can't argue with the numbers you've got. So keep me informed. Let me know how that goes. We're, you know, the more we do this, the more we're learning. And I think I know a lot about fuel mileage, but being here hands-on in the shop, I'm learning more all the time, which is a good thing. Let's go to Lance in South Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Evening, Kevin.
Hey there, what's up?
Oh, not much. I had to take my truck to the shop this week. Well, my boss's truck. It was I just had it serviced, come back from vacation, hadn't driven it probably not even 100 miles. And it was acting like it was getting no fuel. I thought, oh, okay, they did a service, must put a bad fuel filter on, something like that. That's just what it was acting like, you know?
Right.
Put it in the shop, and the guy, you know, he threw some fuel filters on, and he's like, and it didn't do nothing. It was completely acting like it wasn't getting fuel. And he looked at it, took 7 hours, and I don't know if it's good or bad, and it come up to be a crankcase filter. I was familiar with
the breather.
I guess he called it a crankcase filter, and he says it's. They had a guy, a technician that was over at Freightliner that was newly trained. He was a new mechanic, not an old mechanic, so he doesn't know the old stuff. He knows the new stuff, and
he says
most people replace their DPF instead of replacing the stupid filter. He says he's seen entire fleets not even know they have this filter element. Are you familiar with this thing, and what's it do, and where's it at?
What engine is this?
This is the Cummins ISX.
What year?
2009.
Yeah, you know what they're doing? Part of the emissions, I'm pretty sure I've got it right on this particular engine. You know how we talk about blow-by and the breather tube on most engines, and you can see all the junk coming out of the blow-by?
Wow.
This engine's got a closed crankcase system. We're not breathing out. We're not allowing the blow-by to come out into the atmosphere. They're recirculating and filtering the blow-by. So what could possibly happen, and what it's sounding like, is if that filter clogs, we could create a lot of restriction because we wouldn't be getting any venting out of the engine at all.
Okay.
There's even some products on the market that people believe there's enough unburnt fuel and oil in the blow-by, that if we could reroute that blow-by filter it and reintroduce it into the combustion chamber, we could burn it, and it should improve fuel economy. And again, sounds good on paper. I've tried it, and I've seen zero difference. I went through one system three different times. They kept redesigning the system. It never worked. I never even really bothered to talk about it. But I see there's a couple more back on the market again.
When we looked at that, I was kind of surprised. I haven't paid any attention to those. And the service or the maintenance supervisor at that place, actually this guy's boss, had ASE certified on his side, and he didn't know anything about these things. I just thought it was kind of funny. Here's the newest, youngest mechanic in the place knows about it. These guys been doing it their whole lives,
right.
Had no clue. And he says he's literally seen people replace the entire DPF for this thing. Do you know where it's? I don't understand how people could be missing that. And he says this should have been replaced about three times by now on this truck, and it had never been replaced.
You know, it's kind of crazy. What I might do is look in the. I might get a copy of the ISX manual for that year. It obviously should be something that isn't just in a maintenance manual. It should be in the owner's manual if we need to change it that often.
Right. Well, I was just curious. That one there just kind of got me because I was like, it's one of those things that just drove me nuts. And I'd had it in the shop a couple times before here recently for fuel filters. I thought, it's got to be some of the fuel filter. It couldn't have been something else, but... But other than that, I just thought that was something different. Didn't know if you'd heard about them. And do you know where they're generally located or on that engine? I don't know if this is. He showed me basically what the old one looked like, and it looked like it'd be something that would be under a cover somewhere. But those are out there looking. Especially if someone owns one of these newer trucks, they're thinking, oh, man, the DPF is getting full, and $300,000 on, they're starting to sweat. It looks like it might, and maybe it could just be this filter. You might not have to spend a bunch of money.
Well, that would certainly be nice. I'll put it on my list, and we'll do some digging into that one.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Good talking to you. Let's go next to... if you're listening online and you want to join us on the call, we do have a couple more questions here tonight. You might be able to sneak in. 347-884-8327. If you're on the call and you'd like to jump in and join us with a question, a comment, a topic, press 1, and Lisa will get to your calls. And I'm going next to Dale. Carl, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Top of the evening.
Good evening. Hello? What's on your mind tonight?
Kevin, I have a question. I've talked to two different shops here in Colorado about doing some stuff in my ECM on my ISX. It's an 07. They say they can delete the EGR system completely out and leave the whole system there so it looks like it's there and working, but just delete it out. Have you heard that?
There are a lot of companies, including us, we're working with Pittsburgh Power and some other people to come up with the best way of doing this. So, yeah, there are a lot of ideas out there. Some are working and some aren't.
Okay. Well, that was
we're
my
actually,
big thing. Go ahead.
One of the things we're trying to do is develop a way to do this without messing with the ECM. One of the things we're always concerned about when we go in and we start changing ECM settings, there can be some EPA concerns. I don't really worry too much about that because I don't think anybody's checking. But the other concern is, once you've changed the ECM, you really can't let anybody work on that engine that might go into the ECM. Because, some of these reflashing, I see companies charge $1,000, $1,500 to custom program an ECM. And if you end up in an engine shop and they wipe out that programming, it's just lost. You would have to pay it again. So we're always... It's not that we're against doing that. I don't have a problem custom programming ECMs. But if we can find another solution, we'd rather do it because we don't want to see somebody spend that kind of money and then have their high, you know, tech expensive ECM wiped out by some engine shop. So the solution we're looking at would leave the entire EGR system in place, but wouldn't require any reprogramming of the ECM.
Okay. Well, yeah, one company said they wanted $2,200 and one said $600. So that was a big difference there.
Wow. That is a big difference. And, you know, it's hard for me to even respond because this is so new that I don't know. I mean, I can tell you what some companies are doing. Some companies are simply closing the EGR valve and welding it or doing something to make sure it can't open again, and then literally just reprogramming the ECM so that that doesn't cause a derating of the engine and things like that, and charging $1,500, $2,000, $2,500 to do it. If they know what they're doing and we get the results and we go back to a pre-EGR engine, it's probably worth it. Somebody's coming up with $600 and how they're doing it, I have no idea. I mean, in order to know whether or not this is going to be a fix, I would literally have to know every step of what they're doing, and most companies aren't telling you.
Right. Well, these two companies are saying they're just doing it in the ECM, only in the ECM. They're not welding anything. It's only going to be a program. Period. They're going to hook a computer to it. They're going to write the program themselves, wipe out everything, and rewrite it.
I'm not saying it wouldn't work. I'm not completely convinced that that will work, but they might be onto something. The only way we're going to know is to get enough results from people and get enough feedback. So I really don't know.
Okay. Now, next question. I just put on the energies today, all eight.
Okay.
And all right. I was talking to the tire shop, and I said, all right, do you have Centromatics or True Balance in here? Yes, we have them, but we don't recommend them. We don't think you need them with a Michelin tire.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. You know I'm a pretty big fan of Michelin tires.
Right.
But I don't care how good a tire's made. The entire assembly, when we start talking about this giant spinning mass of metal and rubber, I don't care how good the tire's made. The odds of that thing being completely in balance on its own are slim to none. You know, we've got a rim. We've got studs, we've got lug nuts, we've got a tire, we've got mounting issues, we've got centering issues. To think that that thing's going to be on there perfectly centered and perfectly balanced, it's one thing to say they're great tires. I don't believe an assembly like that is ever in balance by itself.
Well, I tend to agree with you. I have them on my steers, but they talked me out of putting them on the drives. Which I think I might just go back and put them on anyway, but they did talk me out of them. I mean, every manager there was like, why would you want to do that? Why? I mean, I couldn't really explain it. I'm like, well, because I want my truck to run and I want my tires to last. You know?
What shop were you at?
TCI in the Springs.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
So
interesting.
You know, I mean, yeah, it was interesting. I mean, you know, to be honest, they talked me out of putting on the X1 energies because I was going to go to those too. They're like, well, you're not going to have any traction in the snow, you know, and all I do is climb the mountains. I run back and forth from the Springs to Vail. That's
right.
It. And they're like, well, you're not going to have any traction in the snow. You're not going to like them. You're going to be mad at us. And So they talked me right out of them.
Well, I don't even know what to say. You know, tires are different styles of tires are certainly a personal preference. Some people like a certain style. Some styles perform. So I can understand when somebody says, oh, no, I really didn't like that tire. You should try this tire. I can kind of get it with the tires. Balancing, it's pretty black and white. Those assemblies aren't balanced when they're not balanced. You know what happens, though, is we don't notice it as much when it's in the drives. Everybody talks about balancing steers, and that makes sense. But I don't know. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody who has balanced the drives with, like, a True Balance and a Balance Master, a Centromatic, whichever one it happens to be, and has been disappointed in the results.
Right. Well, I'll probably wind up going back, but hopefully that'll bring the fuel mileage up on this truck.
I wouldn't count on any balancing affecting fuel mileage. I know there's some new studies out that say that it can, and logically it's possible, but I wouldn't count on it. Let's go to Oklahoma. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin.
Hello,
I have
there.
a couple of questions for you. One, I've got an oil sample I want you to look at. Got it in front of you yet? Lisa emailed it to you.
Did Lisa send it to me? Start with your question and I'll see if I can find it.
Okay. I hear a lot of guys calling in saying the one of the big fixes for these C15 Acer caps, they've got the 475s and they uprate them to 550s and they say they get worlds of fuel economy better, whatever it is. But I notice a lot of them say that they have the 1650 torque 475. I'm wondering if uprating my 1850 torque 475 to a 550, if I'll see the same kind of results.
You know, I'm not completely convinced that these results are real.
Okay.
And here's why. There are certain things I'm finding that people want to believe more than others. And one of them has always been, people have always wanted to believe that turning up horsepower improves fuel mileage. Well, logically, we know that if you use more horsepower, you have to use more fuel. It's impossible not to. It takes more fuel to produce more horsepower. If it's driven properly in the hills and we really know what we're doing, we might be able to squeak out a little more fuel mileage because the engine isn't working quite as hard. But on the other hand, if we turn up torque and horsepower, we get in and we put our foot in it all the time, we're going to see our fuel mileage go down.
Exactly.
But people want to believe in the horsepower thing more than it really works. Now, if we do something to improve the efficiency of the engine and it also improves horsepower, I can see, and we see that all the time with certain products. When we let the engine breathe better with the filters and a muffler, we also see a horsepower increase, and we see much better fuel mileage. But it wasn't really the horsepower going up that increased the fuel mileage. It was the fact that the engine is running so much more efficiently now. So when we alter the engine to get more performance out of it with some sort of a modification, then we tend to see fuel mileage go up. But if all we do is go into an engine and we turn up the horsepower without doing anything else, I'm still not convinced we're seeing the kind of fuel mileage gains that some people are talking about. It's kind of like we really see this with the propane, since I've been testing propane. People, for some reason, and I don't know why, really want to believe that propane works. Many people that I've talked to and said, I'm testing propane and here's my results, they're really, really disappointed because they really thought propane was going to work. I don't know why people want to believe in propane so much, but they do. People want to believe in just turning up horsepower, and I don't necessarily believe in it. So that was a long kind of diatribe, but and I really don't know the answer to your question because I haven't seen any good numbers that I'm convinced of.
And I agree because when you're taking an 1850 torque motor from 475 to 500, the only way you do that is you move the torque curve up in the RPM range, right? So what happens when the torque curve is higher, you're spinning the motor faster. In order to do that, it takes more fuel, right? I mean, is that logical?
Yeah, it's very logical. So, yeah, I don't really see it. I mean,
I just got it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't see it. I'm, you know, there was a time two years ago or so where I would tell people, no, don't turn it up to 500, turn it down to 425. Mm-hmm. And we've proven over the years that if you turn horsepower down, we will see a fuel mileage increase. That's why fleets do it. It's an easy way to make sure a driver doesn't use the extra horsepower. That's why I actually used to tell people to do it, because it worked. But it also makes the truck a little less drivable. You know, what Bruce taught me was look, if we turn it up or we produce more horsepower, we do it the right way, we drive it the right way, for an owner-operator, we can give them a more drivable truck that they enjoy driving, and we can still get fuel mileage increases. But you really don't hear me telling people, go turn your horsepower up. Because if that's all we do, the odds of getting a fuel mileage increase are very slim, and the odds of it going down are actually better. So I still don't recommend just taking a factory engine in and turning it up.
Well, I guess, you know, before I bought this truck, I did the research. I plugged the ECM in. It told me the thing got 6.4 miles to the gallon. And I thought, wow, for a W9, that's pretty good. A long wheelbase W9, you know, pulling flatbed, that's pretty good. That ECM fuel economy was way off because I track every tank, and my average right now is 5.49, and I drive 60 miles an hour. I literally use 5% throttle going up all the hills. I'm the guy that gained 3/4 of a mile to the gallon going up the hills by driving them right. And I'm still only at 5.5. There is nothing I can do to get this thing to get any better fuel. I'm in my wit's end.
Yeah, boy, I don't blame you. And on top of that, I'm looking at your oil sample, and sometimes I might say, wow, if you've got an engine we just can't improve, maybe the engine's just not healthy. Maybe there's something wrong with it. I can't imagine a better oil sample than what I'm looking at right here.
With almost 18,000 miles on it.
You could probably sample some oil right out of the jug and it wouldn't be this clean.
Well, on the additive metals, parts per million, magnesium and calcium and zinc and phosphorus, I mean, that's just what's in the oil, right?
Yeah. Yeah, additive metals, they're supposed to be there anyway. The reason we test for them is to look for deterioration in those additives, or we actually measure it against what we know is supposed to be in the oil, so that if it shows up in abnormal numbers, we start to question why. Do we have some sort of other contamination? Are we missing additives that should be there? So those numbers, they're all normal, or they would have flagged them for some reason.
Okay. Yeah, just frustrated, man. It seems like everywhere I go, I got a headwind and I'm always heavy, so that doesn't help my situation either.
Yeah. Turn around and go the other way.
Yeah. I don't think the boss would like that too much, but
okay.
Oh well.
Sometimes we get that truck where we get to the point and I say, look, if it were mine, I would not spend one more penny trying to improve fuel mileage. I would seriously consider getting rid of the truck.
Yeah, and, you know, after seeing this, I was planning on, I mean, with 710,000 miles on it, I figured I'd be doing an in-frame here, you know, within the next year. I do about 180,000 a year.
Oh, no.
And looking at this, I don't think so.
No, this thing is no indications of needing any kind of engine work whatsoever. We just occasionally run up against a truck that, I don't know why, we just can't get fuel mileage out of them. And tonight seems to be the night. I mean, we're getting all the, you know, normally we get all the calls about how great everything's working, but tonight is all the calls of we can't get fuel mileage or we didn't get to see the increase we thought we would. You know, the first caller who's already up at 8, I don't feel, you know, too bad for him because he's making a bunch of money and it's not a big deal. But when we run around under 6 and we just can't get it up no matter what we do, that's a problem. I really start considering getting rid of a truck like that.
You know, and here's another thing that gets me. I'll make it fast because I know there's more guys. But I put mufflers on this thing, and my fuel economy went down. And that was this winter. This winter I got my number right here, new mufflers. I had an average of 5.59. I went down, and I came up, and now I'm back down again. I've got up to a 5.87 was the highest I ever got my average.
When it's all over the board like that, and I've had a couple trucks in here this week that have been all over the board, really tough. We have to dig a little deeper. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Bill, I want to get you in before we wrap this up. Go ahead.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, I've got a C15 cat. And my turbo, I only get about 15 to 18 pounds of boost. I drive a car hauler, and I probably, when I'm loaded, I get about 5.2. Overall, I get about 5.4 on my mileage. But I guess I try not to use that boost too much, and I'm trying to figure out, is it worth putting a turbo on this if you're not going to use the boost once you get it on there? It sort of confuses me when I hear you talk about that.
Well, when you say put a turbo on, what do you mean? Do you think there's something wrong with yours?
Well, that's what, you know, everybody I hear calling in talks about how they get 30 pounds of boost or 35 pounds of boost. And when I'm flat out, the best I do is about 18 pounds of boost.
What horsepower?
The 475.
And it's a C13?
No, 15.
Oh, you said a C15. What year?
2000.
That certainly sounds low, but have we verified that, first of all, the gauge is right, and we don't have any leaks on the intake system from the turbo back through the charger cooler and into the intake? Have we verified that we just don't have any leaks and that the gauge is right?
Well, I haven't verified that, but we did verify there was no leaks. But it just don't seem like it wants the boost at all. I mean, it hardly ever moves. I mean, yeah, I never thought about the gauge being bad.
That's one of the things I'd verify. I mean, you know, let's start with the easy stuff first. Is this thing just really a dog? I mean, is the performance that bad?
No, it really not. It really pulls good and it runs good and.
Yeah,
you know, all the other guys that I run with, they're in the high fours. And, you know, I can stay, like I say, when I'm loaded, I'm 5'2". When I'm empty, I'm 5'8".
Oh,
I mean, I'm not real.
I wouldn't spend any money on a turbo. I mean, I would verify the gauge. If for some reason, you know, after, you know, you might even want to get a better gauge. Some of the factory gauges for turbo boost are just horrible. They have big increments. They're not very accurate. They don't tell us much. You may just want to put a better gauge on it. They're not that expensive. And then if you still thought there might be a problem, you could always just pull the turbo off and inspect it, clean it. While you've got it off, you could polish the shafts on it, which is a nice little improvement. My guess is there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. I had to replace the pipe behind it and, you know, the exhaust back, and I looked through it and it looked good. No leaking, no, you know, it seemed to work all right, but it just, you know, the gauge is what threw me off that
try,
makes sense.
Try a new gauge. Verify the fitting. Verify the lines that everything, you don't, we don't have any kinks anywhere. There's no problems. And verify, replace it with a better gauge, and then let's go from there and see what happens with that. But I wouldn't replace a turbo. It doesn't sound like anything's wrong with it. All right, I want to thank everybody for joining me. Stick around. The live show's coming up in 30 minutes, and we will be back here again tomorrow night with Audio Road. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.